Congressman Rodney Frelinghuysen is chairman of the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for your time today. I followed with great interest the hearing on the Navy and Marine Corps this week, and especially the discussion that revolved around the littoral combat ship. For a body where there's a perception that Democrats and Republicans don't agree on very much, it seems that you and your ranking member, Congressman Visklosky, are very, very concerned about the status of the LCS. Is that a fair observation on my part, sir?
Well, there are two versions of the littoral combat ship, and the Navy's counting on them because they're an essential part of the fleet. And so it was a surprise when the president's defense budget came out and the Defense Department, not Congress, decided they were not satisfied apparently with either version, that they felt that there was a certain degree of vulnerability that the littoral combat ship has, both models. But having said that, historically there's been no separation between the leadership of the committee, either the ranking or the now on the new chair, between the need for littoral combat ships, but the department seems to have sort of thrown a monkey wrench in here.
Now, you're certainly conversant in the work of the operational test and evaluation organization inside DOD. Mr. Gilmore there has been talking about and reporting on the issues with LCS for a number of years. How does that frame the way that you expect to look at this program moving forward, especially vis-a-vis funding?
Well, the Navy itself has questioned the lethality and the survivability of the two littoral combat ship models, and they want to, you know, continue to build two dozen more. So I think to some extent it falls upon them to, if you pardon the expression, get their act together. I think members, irregardless of political persuasion, agree with the Navy. The size of the fleet is too small, given all the issues in terms of the Chinese trying to exclude us, you know, from the high seas, and the from time to time the tension that comes when they test our wills, and our will is being tested around the world by the Chinese, and in more local waters even the Iranians from time to time have challenged us.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder then if one of my takeaways from the hearing was, are we thinking about the LCS, the size of the program and the number of ships, maybe looking at it from the wrong direction? You know, most of the people in my shoes who are covering this from the outside are looking at the 52 versus 32. But as you mentioned, if the Navy itself has questions about survivability, maybe the way we should be looking at this is 32 versus zero.
Well, we need to respect where the Navy is coming from. I think members of Congress over the last 4 or 5 years have endorsed both models, but survivability is surely an issue. The other problem is, if you have less ships, that means higher price tags for the ones that are still, you know, still in line to be built, and some are being built as we speak. But then we have other obligations. We're working on. We still have a bipartisan mandate to have two Virginia class submarines. We want to have an investment in a new Ohio class replacement, which is not inexpensive. There's talk of the Navy mothballing the George Washington, the aircraft carrier. I mean, the Navy has a lot of programs they want to invest in. We're not picking winners and losers, but they are, you know, they're suggesting that perhaps we need the littoral combat ship to have the survivability that should have been thought about, quite honestly, a long time ago.
Secretary Mabus told your colleague, Congressman Crenshaw, that the review that the Navy and the Defense Department's undertaking of the LCS program, the task force that Secretary Hagel has created, is kind of, I'm paraphrasing here, it's not a quote, but he made it sound as though it's standard operating procedure. Do you agree with that, or is this something that strikes you as unusual at this point, point in the game with the LCS?
Well, I support both models. I am concerned. Members of Congress raised it before the Defense Department really came out, earlier this year, and suggested we need a something with more survivability. No, I think we sort of question the numbers that the Navy has put into the overall fleet itself. There seem to be sort of even the hospital ship is counted as a, and it's certainly essential to the Navy's mission, but there are all sorts of ships being counted that in the past have not been counted. And so I think that's sort of what Congressman Crenshaw was talking about, is that they have this new methodology to increase the Navy's ship count by 10 ships without the Navy, I think, even accepting the delivery of one new ship. In other words, they're counting ships that are not viable, in home port, that are undergoing renovation.
You introduced, Mr. Chairman, a point of discussion at this hearing that I think has been lacking in the discussion about the size of the Navy overall, and you pointed out the contrast between the arc of where our Navy is headed, and the arc that the Chinese Navy is headed on. It seems to me that given the events in Crimea and the importance of the Russian Navy base there, the Russian Navy is something that should be a consideration in our conversation. Do you worry that we are thinking about the size, not just of the Navy, but of all the branches of the military in a vacuum and not sufficiently thinking about them in terms of foreign policy and our interests in various parts of the world?
Well, when the president said in his State of the Union address that we're going to get off a permanent war footing, many of us were sort of surprised, since we have a lot of international terrorist groups that aren't, should we say, closely identified with one country or the other. We have obviously adversaries like Iran and North Korea that have a certain amount of potential, and their potential adversaries. The Chinese are not slowing down. From what our sources tell me, they're working on a fleet of 200 submarines, diesel and nuclear. They're working on a blue navy. There has been a lot of dismissive talk about the Chinese versus ours, and let me say, I think we have the greatest navy in the world. But in reality, numbers still count. And while we have the technological advantage now, with some incredible systems, incredible sailors, and we have a incredible submarine fleet with all sorts of technologies, the Chinese are not far behind. And let me say, relative to the Russians, we don't see them much in the Pacific. They do have a presence. And what was most alarming, talking about the number of aircraft carriers, the Navy couldn't answer, to some extent, the last time we had a aircraft carrier in the Mediterranean. So because when we took action in Libya, and that was a multi-nation effort, we were the ones that supplied the know-how and the tactical advantage, but we didn't have an aircraft there. And now things in the Crimea, not that that would be a launching pad for NATO, but sometimes having a carrier and its company sends a message. What we're talking about here, we need to project power, and we can't project power with such a small fleet. We need to get working. We need to make our ships better. We need to get going on our shipbuilding program. We got to have ships that are not mothballed. There's a lot of talk of sort of mothballing, some of the frigates here. We need them out to show the world that we are the power that we are.
Mr. Chairman, you cited, in addition to the concerns about the LCS and some of the other weapon systems, you mentioned concerns about the number of Navy commanders that are undergoing misconduct investigations, being removed from command, the cheating scandal at the nuclear power school, the Fat Leonard contracting scandal, and some others. The quote that I wrote down was, you said to the witnesses, Secretary Mabus, Admiral Greener, General Amos, we need an explanation of what's going on. Is it as simple as them being able to just kind of give you a tick list of all of the things that they're looking at, or are there deeper, broader answers that you're looking for?
Well,
respectfully,
they didn't respond to my comments. They were in my initial opening remarks. And there's been basically one incident every week since the beginning of the year where there's been incidents of naval officer or Navy misconduct. So that is not a, you know, that's not true of the 99% of those who serve our country, whether they be a seaman or whether they be a naval, but they be an admiral. But I do think the public and members of Congress are appalled by some of the scandals that have rolled out. And I particularly, I include Congressman Vizglovsky from Indiana in this. We were the leaders of the committee that had oversight of our nuclear reactor program. And to think that people would be violating, shall we say, the code that was set up by Admiral Rickover, the father of the nuclear Navy, and putting at risk not only other sailors' lives because of this cheating scandal and what those submarines cost. And the nuclear fleet is not just below the surface. It's not just those who serve on submarines, but our nuclear aircraft carriers, too, have an incredibly well-qualified crew. And to think that type of behavior has actually, from reliable sources, been going on for some years is pretty unacceptable.
Mr. Chairman, one final thought. One of the systems that was discussed at this hearing this week was the F-35. I had Mike Sullivan from the Government Accountability Office talking about some of the software issues with the F-35 on my program. Are you satisfied overall with where that program is right now? Are you confident that it's on upward trajectory now?
There are all sorts of models. The Navy has one that they specifically want. It's the largest defense contract, probably the largest program, most expensive that we've ever had in the history of the military. I'm supportive of it. We need a next generation of fighter. This is an aircraft we need. We terminated the F-22, the Raptor, but this is one which involves international support, and our allies are counting on it. It has a degree of stealth. It has, as those who fly it, the most skilled pilots. But it hasn't been without troubles, and quite honestly, we want to make sure that whatever platforms they have, that they're working, and that they provide the level of capability that allow us to do whatever we might do to meet a international crisis, whether it be the Marine version, the Navy version, or the Air Force version, or for that matter, the capabilities that we give to our international partners who are going to be sharing the skies with basically the same airframe.